back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to the latest edition of the MVP Cast. I'm your host, Mark Woods. This time, my guest is, well, one of the top British players of this generation, a genuine globetrotter in every sense of the word, one of the many products of Jimmy Rogers' programme down at Brixton Topcats, then a college star at the University of Washington, then he's had stops in Turkey, Serbia, France, Germany, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, Japan, and Uruguay. I hope I haven't missed anyone out there. But now he's back at home in London at the age of 30, starring for the newcomers to the BBL, the London City Royals. Matthew Brown, welcome to the MVP Cast.
Thank you, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So many things we could touch upon with all these different experiences that you've had on the road around the world. But let's start with this. What made you decide to come back to the UK when I suspect you still could have earned a pretty nice deal from somewhere else overseas?
Just age, I think. Obviously, I've got years left, I believe, of my career, knocking on wood, barring any injury. But I have the opportunity. It's something I know that the BBL and trying to have a franchise in Europe and whatnot, and the opportunity came up. It wasn't something I heard about the team at the end of last summer, or end of last year, basketball season, sorry. And I heard about everything that was going on. I was supporting it, obviously, because it's a lot of guys around the program that I knew. But it wasn't something I thought of myself as coming back to. But to be honest, I think the salary cap went up for the BBL right before or right in the summertime. So I was getting offers to other places. They was able to offer me a certain amount. They kind of asked me what was the lowest I would come back for. So kind of got to a point where it was like, well, we can offer you this. I know it's not exactly what you wanted, but we can offer you this. Would you think about staying home for it? Then had meetings with, obviously, Nam Oshiri being head of basketball operations. But the people behind it, the owner, the boards, the guys that were on the board that run the team and their vision and where they were trying to get to. And it was just felt like it could be something special that I could be a part of. And obviously, I could have waited and been a part of it next year or the year after when things had been established. But I think there's always kind of being that inception part of the goal, you know, those first 10, 12 guys that start the dream. They might not all necessarily be the ones that finish it, but if I'm one of those guys that can help start the trend, I think Justin had started it a bit last year when he came home and played with the Lions, and guys was, I know, speaking to him about playing at home versus playing overseas, but with this opportunity, I think the board have come together and put a good sum of money and good sum of backing behind it, and they're serious about it. So I felt it was the right time. Obviously, like I said, I'm 30 now, getting a bit older, and I've got a seven-year-old son who I'm obviously trying to be around as much as possible, and I think it all kind of played a part in trying to sort out my life and continuing my career, and hopefully this could be the next step in being able to be here permanently.
There's very high expectations that the Royals put on themselves as an organisation to win trophies, one, to make a difference off the court, to, I guess, have an impact in generally on British basketball. And contrast what you expected from this season against what it's been like in reality.
For us, I don't think they put too much pressure on themselves. For any franchise, for any team, they're going to have to, you know, have people talking about them. I think that's what they did. They had the whole league talking, they had fans talking, they had other teams talking about what they were trying to do, which I think is only a positive. As they say, all publicity is good publicity. If your name's in people's mouths, then you're doing something. And I think that's what they intended. And I'm not saying that they have given a false narrative and they're not trying to do what they have said, but I think that they've come about in the right way. Obviously, in 2018, 2019, the years that we're living in, the era that we're living in, social media is huge. And they've used that to their advantage. They have a lot of people talking about them and everything that's gone on. I understand where they were coming from in terms of trying to force a change, because if I'm completely honest, I didn't think I would be back here playing anytime soon. Growing up, obviously, most people, most British guys know how we viewed the BBL, and like it, the guys that were playing overseas and guys that had gone to school in the States, it was nothing that they wanted to, oh yeah, I'm done playing college basketball and I want to come back and play in the BBL. they want to, obviously, if it's not trying to get stuff in the NBA, it's higher level Europe, playing in the ACBs, playing in Liga 1 and playing in Turkey and whatever leagues there are, top leagues around the world. So I think what they've done is they're trying to cancel out the middleman. We feel that we can play at a high level, and we feel that obviously if you can play at a high level, you're going to get paid for playing at a high level. So if you can play in those type of leagues, you know you're going to get the money that you're worth. Whereas I think what the City Royals as a staff and as a team have tried to do is, well, if we've got the money, we'll pay you to come home and play. So you can be a superstar in your own country. There's guys, I use this as a very good example, guys like Sergio, I think it's Sergio Rodriguez that used to play for Portland. Yeah. And gone back and literally could have had signed another contract in the NBA, but he said he'd rather be at home playing in Spain in for Real Madrid and be a superstar at home versus being a role player or having maybe more money or whatnot, but in the NBA. So if guys can potentially, obviously the NBA is the highest level and you're going to have the best competition, but if guys potentially could be like they want to play in their home country because it's what they're used to, it's what they're comfortable with, and they're treated like rock stars or whatever it may be in their home country, why would they not do so? So I understand it being a certain type of level playing in the NBA, and I'm not comparing playing in the BBL to playing in the NBA, but if you can get guys that are very good British players that they don't have to travel to Spain or travel to Germany or travel to Italy, and they can stay home and be treated a certain type of way as if they are superstars and whatnot in their own country, I don't see why guys wouldn't want that.
How fun is it to have your son be able to see you play a bit more often? Because always you see every summer the two of you guys, wherever you might be spotted at games, the two of you are inseparable. Is it nice to know he's at an age where he can remember you playing, he can come to the, you know, come to a game maybe from time to time and see that? Is that kind of fun?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, definitely part of the reason why I'd come home. He had obviously traveled with me, not like on a full-term, full-yearly basis, but they'd come to see me many a times, pretty much every country that I've been to. So he would actually see me play, but obviously it being on a week-to-week basis is completely different. Him talking to me about the games or getting excited or who do you play this week or telling me, oh, I know you got this team this week. Oh, for people obviously listening on the podcast don't know my relationship with Justin Robinson from the Lions. He's my son's godfather. So even him talking about, oh, it's going to be a good game when you guys play the Lions, I get to see Daddy play Uncle Justin and stuff like that. It's just things that you don't realize that guys that have to go overseas, that they're not able to experience. And being able to come home and obviously, like you said, you guys see me at events, usually at like the playoff finals or any other basketball event, you see me with my son and bringing him out and letting him enjoy the time out and seeing people and getting to know more people in the basketball world, in my world, and being able to have him there and everybody see and him supporting me and screaming and up cheering with the fans, and it's just a lot.
Obviously, he's not allowed to cheer for Uncle Justin when you're playing Uncle Justin.
Yeah, yeah. But the kid is so sweet. It's like he actually said to me, I think we played them the first time, I don't know who I should be cheering for, Daddy or Uncle Justin. I'm like, as much as you love Uncle Justin, I think you might love Daddy a little bit more.
fair trade. Having seen a lot of these different leagues, including the NCAA, What do you think the biggest area is where the BBL could either improve or change or evolve?
Structurally, obviously not trying to criticize anybody, but just structurally, you don't feel like, for example, now, I think we've played 16, 15 games, where some teams, obviously, they did it a bit different for Leicester, so Leicester's played a few less games, but then we've also got Sheffield, who've played right now 20 games. Like, you don't have that in other leagues. I think everybody, you know when your games are, and everybody kind of plays on the same weekend, or even if you do have a double header or something like that, like, you have structurally, so right now, it's like there's games in hand, and it says we're sitting in sixth or seventh or whatever they've been, but by percentage, we're really in third or fourth. Like, there's a lot of confusion, I think, within the league. I think it should be based on one set structure, my personal opinion, and things will run a bit smoother. Other than that, which obviously is going to be tough to do because it's obviously a sport in the UK that, yes, it's growing, but it's not on the level of a football or a rugby. So sponsorship and having the money and the backing to be able to do structurally the same things as other leagues is a lot more difficult. But as long as you have those kind of two things, I think it will evolve in a type of way that people will be surprising to some people. I think that just helps, obviously, the money-wise helps bring you a better level of player. Not to disrespect anybody in this league, but different level of Americans, different level of... I don't understand, obviously, if the money was there, why the top-level Americans wouldn't want to be here. If you don't, if you have to leave the States and you can go to a country where their first language is English, obviously, you're playing a high level of basketball, and structurally everything's done the right way, why would you go, why would you not want to come here versus going to not necessarily Spain, but any other country where obviously the barriers in your off-court life is going to predict how much fun that you have or how much you enjoy your teammates or how much you enjoy just living in the city or in the country, sorry. But I think those two things are probably the main two things, first off, would be how to improve the league as a whole.
From the nine countries that you've been overseas, what's really stood out for you, or where stood out for you from just a life experience point of view?
Life experience. You kind of threw me off on that question. life experience. I was in Japan. If you're talking about life experience, not basketball or anything, just life experience, just when I was in Japan, I think it kind of opened my eyes up to how culturally different they are compared to other countries that I've been to. In saying that, I've never been to any country personally, which I know other British guys have, other Americans that I know that I've played with or played against have, but I've never been to a country where I've had any race issues. So, Japan or in Asia in general, because I've also been to South Korea for a bit and I was in China a bit last summer, but just in Asia in general, they're so stuck in their ways and you can just see how, and that's not to say it in a negative way, but they're so stuck in their ways in terms of this is rude, this is not what's not rude, you have to do this. And what I liked about them is because obviously me being a 6'9", 6'10", black guy, they know obviously I'm not from there. So they kind of understood that, oh yeah, he might not understand doing this is the wrong thing to do in this country or it's disrespectful. And they actually teach you and help you understand. So life is a lot smoother when you're off the court. From a life standpoint, obviously, because it's a country that, obviously, outside of basketball, I don't think I would have been traveling to or planned on traveling to necessarily. But you get to see so much different things, even architecturally, going there and seeing temples and just going through life out there was a very interesting 9-10 months.
I think we might have left Argentina off the list. That was one of your Argentina countries on the list. So there you go. So now 10 countries. That's pretty impressive. I mean, Latin America is a place that not many, certainly European basketballers go to, even, you know, across the world. It's quite off the beaten track in a basketball, you know, experience. Mm-hmm. What's that like? I mean, was it unusual? Did you have unusual experiences there? Because, you know, culturally, language-wise, it's you know, very, very different.
Yeah, I enjoyed Latin America. Had a lot of fun, had a lot of success on the court while I was out there. For me, their basketball was different in terms of Europe, because obviously Europeans is more of a team game, and you can talk about the NBA being a lot of one-on-one and individual talent, whereas obviously in the Spains, you could legit average 15 points a game and be the league's leading scorer, whereas obviously in the NBA and South America, it's a lot more individual talent in terms of being able to play the game. So for me, that worked out perfectly. Obviously, offensively, I can score the ball in multiple different ways, and I think it helped my game out, and which is why I was very successful while I was over there. But it's just different. It's just different. I think they look to, obviously, it being so close to America, they look to Americans more when they're signing their guys. That's what it is. I actually went out there on a fluke. My first year was in Mexico, I actually went out there on a fluke. I was leaving my team in Germany, and I'd actually signed a new agent. And the agent that I'd signed with knew the head coach of a team, because their big man had just got injured and was going to be out for the season. He had a broken foot. And it wasn't in terms of they were having a conversation and he brought my name up and whatever. He was just talking to the coach about his team and how everything's going. The coach was a Spanish guy by the name of Ivan Denis, and was just having a conversation with him, and they told him what everything that had happened. He was like, I've actually just signed a 6'10 good athlete. He went to University of Washington, but he's about to leave his team in Germany. What do you think? He just started sending him some footage of me and said it would be perfect. He would think it would be a perfect fit. He said also the guy that he was releasing wasn't as talented a scorer offensively as me, but he was a defensive monster, but they needed some more scoring because their starting two guard was actually the leading scorer in the league, but he was their only real main threat. And then once I got there, it was like we clicked from day one, myself and that player, and everybody around us played their role, and we just had a great team, and it ended up being successful for me. And then that kind of just opened the doors to Latin America for me. They have a lot of leagues in the summer. Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic. Argentina is actually a full 10 months, so it goes on past the regular season and doesn't finish until like July. So all these doors kind of opened up as soon as I had a great year, that first year in Mexico, kind of the whole of Latin American doors opened up for me.
If we take out Washington and London, of course, where's the best food?
Food. Of course, you got to keep London in there. Argentina was really good. They have a thing called asado. It's like just a barbecue kind of... they grill their meats and whatnot on barbecue, but it's well known around the world as one of the best countries to have meat for. I was in the south of France. I like the south of France a lot. Food was really good there too. I was in the Cannes area when I was playing for Antibes, which is maybe 20, 30 minutes away from Monaco, so it's a beautiful place. Living the high life, as people might say, was a beautiful place to play, beautiful scenery, and the food was really good down there. Yeah, probably those two, maybe Mexico too. We actually had a house cook, so all our food was very much authentic Mexican food, which was really good.
Every player, though, when they go abroad, especially one that's played as much abroad as you, has... it always seems to have like a horror tale of you know, something that didn't go well or whatever. I mean, was there one point where that ever sticks out from your career that goes, that's as bad as it got?
I know a lot of players that have played overseas, they've had their worst share in terms of a place to play that they didn't like in terms of their living conditions and their maybe not getting on with their coach or whatever like that. Living-wise, I think every place has been perfect. I've been fortunate to be in good teams and good situations where I'm in a big enough city or good enough city where I haven't had that problem. Only time I think I've ever had a problem was maybe Serbia, my second year out. A team literally went out, told me they was going to pay me this amount of money, which was obviously more than I'd made my first year, and like fought out and seeked me to play for this team. And then when getting there, it was like my game was different from what they expected. But it wasn't my agent that had forced the situation. They had kind of went out and was like, all right, well, we're going to pay you this much. Oh, no, this is not what you want. Well, we'll pay you this much. We want you on your team. So then when I got there, it was actually the assistant coach of the Serbian national team was my head coach. And I'm talking about old school Serbian guy, run your butt to the floor in practice. But one thing about Serbian basketball is they've had huge success on the world stage, and they played their guys. So I actually had a guy who was this is my second year out of school, so I was about 23, 24. A guy that maybe had been a year younger than me, but he was on the national team. So I had to like pretty much fight minutes with him, and obviously with a Serbian coach who's a national team coach, it was just hard fought, to be honest. I don't think it was maybe the best of things for my career. Obviously, it's a learning experience. Anybody that knows me knows I love to play the game. I play with a lot of passion and a lot of excitement, and just being able to having to sit back and knowing that I wasn't in control, and regardless of what I did, I wasn't going to see the floor as much as I believed I should, as much as my American teammates for sure believed I should have. But being able to just use that and grow up as a player and as an adult, and being able to take that under my wing and take that under my belt and just take it for what it was.
You, before all that, of course, you did have a great college career at the University of Washington. I mean, much of it in conjunction with your old chum, Isaiah Thomas. And I was looking back at the archives actually before this, and you know, we were all writing about how the NBA was beckoning. And then you go into draft night, and there's an expectation. You've been mentioned in some draft boards, some others didn't. But then you do go undrafted, and I think shortly after that, you referred to that as the worst moment of your career. I mean, we're 8 years removed from that now. Is that still the worst moment of your career?
I believe so, but the only reason why I believe so is because timing. For me personally, people around me, when I say people around me, I don't necessarily mean British people. I mean Americans, my coach, my teammates. They believe myself and Isaiah would have got drafted, that I had some great workouts, that I had played in the Pitt Portsmouth Invitational for seniors, had a great show in there, averaged about 17 points, 8 rebounds, was all tournament for the Invitational. I believe, if not all four other guys, but the other guys that were on that had a stint in the NBA at least, if they wasn't drafted. But for me, it hurt so much because of timing. That was the year of the lockout. So after not getting drafted, literally, the draft is at the end of June, literally July 1st, the NBA had shut down. So there's no summer league, there's no camps, there's no team camps. So guys that haven't got drafted don't have an opportunity to showcase their skills, say in summer league that summer. Or if teams had wanted to invite me down to training camp to possibly make a roster spot, that was shut down because there was no NBA. And I think that year the NBA didn't start until Christmas Day, and they literally had maybe a week and a half, 2 week camp, training camp, where pretty much all teams were locked in. They knew who they had. The only guys that were new that were in camp were the guys that were the rookies that had been drafted. And even myself, personal situation, my son was just born. So it wasn't a time where I could be like, all right, now I can wait 3, 4, 5 months for the NBA to start up, where I need to be financially stable, where I have to be able to provide for him and my family.
When you look back to over the years, and obviously you've played for some very high level teams, and those are teams that will be watched by the NBA and their scouts, etc. I mean, has there ever been a point since that where you've kind of come closer. There's been something, that possibility maybe of getting into the NBA, or even just for a try, Summer League or whatever. How close have you come?
Oh, I've done Summer League. I did Summer League for the next 3 years. Teams have gone out their way to speak to me and speak to my agent about going to Summer League. So I've been in Vegas the years afterwards. Also, I think it's funny because we just spoke about this, but because my season wasn't great my second year in Serbia, I had ended up doing a summer league that summer, playing for Chicago, I believe it was, and then I'd went straight to a camp for the KBL, which is in South Korea. Mm-hmm. This is a camp where there's 100 guys. There's literally, they do their own draft and whatnot, so there's only 20 spots for imports, 2 per team, 10 teams in the league. So I ended up going, getting drafted. This is in July. You have to report in August. So I report to my team, do everything, get drafted, report to my team. I'm there in August. I get a phone call from my agent at the time saying, is everything good, blah, blah, blah. So I just think it's a general routine checkup. I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. We're doing this, we're doing that, everything's fine. And he was like, all right, we're in a dilemma. I was like, why? Because the money that you make in Asia and South Korea is probably the highest that you'll make, obviously, outside of China or whatnot, but the highest you'll make outside of the NBA. You're getting tens of thousands per month. So everything is perfect for me, and I'm fine. And then I get a call, and he's telling me that we got a problem. I'm like, what's the problem? I literally just got off the phone with the general manager from Portland, and they want you to bring you in for a workout or whatever it may be. So I said, like, how many roster spots do they have? What's going on? They don't have anything right this second. I was like, so what's the point of me leaving where I am, where I'm making the most money that I've made so far in my career in terms of going there? Well, they want to guarantee you that they'll bring you in at least on a 10-day or two. But they want you to play for their D-League team. Obviously, it's the D-League back then, not the G-League. So there's been situations, and it's about obviously weighing out your options. And you can't always take everything you say for face value. But they're telling me that they want me to be on their D-League team in terms of just so I learn everything and I can get up to speed. Because the D-League team usually runs the same team, the same stuff that the NBA team runs. So you know everything that goes on and everything that goes into it. And then they said they're wanting to bring you in on the 10 day or two, or a couple 10 days, just to see how you would work and how you would click with the team. But obviously we can't say when exactly they would do that. And obviously the money that you're making in the G League or in the D League back then is pennies compared to what you'd be making overseas.
Well, I bumped into you for the NBA game in London recently, Knicks Wizards, and you made this very quick comment to me at the end of the game, and it was sort of like, I should be out there. And there's been many a player who's not had your talent that's played a game or one game at the very worst in the NBA. Is that always, do you think, going to be in your mind? I'd just love to have had that on my resume.
It's not even have it on my resume. I think once you're there, it's hard for you. Like, the hardest thing that people say at that level is to get in. It says once you get in, stick in. There's so many organizations and so many players that it's hard for a team not to pick you up in terms of, all right, I might not work in this situation or this system or whatever, but my talents, you can see that I have the talent to be able to play at this level, and I might fit a different situation or a different team or a different system. I think getting in is the hardest part, and that's what a lot of people said to me growing up and while I was in college and while I was in high school, and they said it's not about sticking, it's just about getting in. If you get your foot in the door, then it's easy. Your talent will speak for itself. And you just think about, obviously, guys, and obviously at that level are better than they may, better than I may be now. But it's about once you get your foot in the door, that's all this is really about. There's guys, like, I had a full conversation, I think it was right before I spoke to you, actually, I had a full conversation with Markieff Morris, who's with the Wizards, and it's somebody I know since I've been playing against him since high school, and we had a couple games against each other while he was at Kansas, while I was in college. And he's just the same thing he says. It's just funny because players respect players. obviously it's not players who decide who's in and outside the NBA, but players respect players. And we had a full conversation in terms of he was coming out at halftime and we were just talking, oh, where are you playing now? How's everything going? How you living? You're just going through the grind. You know how it is. It doesn't matter where you at. Just keep grinding, keep playing. Our bodies can only take up so much, can only deal with this damage for so long. So as long as you can keep getting a paycheck, keep playing. So it's just funny because I feel that if I was given the opportunity with the resources, with everything that the NBA has to offer in terms of keeping your body right, in terms of court access, in terms of trainers and ball boys and whatever it may be, I think if I had the opportunity to get into the NBA, I think I would have been had a career in the NBA.
There has been a few 30-something rookies in the NBA. Still time.
Hey. Put everything out. I don't know if I'm too old, or I'll just say put everything in perspective. It's not something that I'm breaking my heart about now versus how I was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
I mean, the other place that you've not played as much for is Great Britain. A lot of people questioned that, especially during Joe Prunty's time in charge. I mean, what's your feeling on that being that you've not had the number of caps that most people would have seen you having?
I think that's down to the personnel. There was a very big incident that happened to myself with the era before Joe Prunty, which definitely left bad blood in my mind with the GB program. I think the people that was running it before was out for themselves and all power to them. It used it to leverage themselves and get themselves in better positions in their life. But I don't think necessarily it was the best people for the job in terms of helping build Great Britain as a country in basketball and on that stage. The Prunty era, he had reached out a couple of summers, or I think it was his first summer, but we hadn't. It wasn't able to work, pretty much, in terms of being invited to Summer League and doing stuff on the NBA scene and still was trying to see if I could make it to the league. And because of dates and whatnot, they had started camp before I came back, and which he kind of understood. Obviously, it's still my dream, like we said at that point, to play in the NBA. So you can't really get mad at me for trying to follow a dream versus playing for my country that first summer, I think it was, with Prunty. And then ever since then, he kind of got a feel for who he liked and who he didn't like. So when I did finally play with Prunty, I ended up sitting on the bench a lot. And then obviously I'm playing overseas at that time. And I'm like, I'm not going to waste my summers when obviously I'm around my son the majority of my summers. And I can't do that, obviously, if I'm with the national team, because we're abroad and in training camp and whatnot. And I'm not going to waste my time. Obviously, it sounds rude, but I don't see it as being rude of just putting my son first before putting the national team first.
I mean, you said about before, I mean, it's really pre-Olympics. What really for you was the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of this program?
I was told, so this was my first year was done as a pro. I played in Turkey, and obviously that was after everything had gone on, like I said, with the lockout and the NBA stuff the summer before, so I wasn't able to play summer league or show my abilities. So 2012, summer before the Olympics, we're at training camp in Houston, and I was told, obviously people know who coaches are, people know who the staff was, but I was told from my agent that I need to make a decision. Do I want to play in the Olympics or do I want to do summer league? Because obviously you didn't play last year, but teams are calling, teams that were interested in you around the draft time, about putting you on their roster and seeing how you've evolved as a player in the last year playing at a professional level. I'd consciously made the decision. Obviously, Olympics is kind of like a once in a lifetime, especially with how he was with the team and it being in the UK and everything. And I'd kind of weighed my options and decided I was having a great camp. All teams, everything looked like I was going to work out with me playing. And my agent, before the deadline came for teams and having their rosters locked in, my agent spoke to the staff of GB and asked if what are my likelihood of making the team. Literally spoke to my agent maybe on a Tuesday or something. Everything's fine. He's like, no, I'm literally asking not because I want insight on matches. I want to know because teams are putting their summer league rosters together and I want to know if this works out. If he's making the right decision, wrong decision, but he said he wanted to do the Olympics and whatnot. So I now have been told from my agent that the staff had told him, no, Matt's had a great couple of weeks in training camp. He's a lock. He's been playing well. We love him. We love this. We love that. And then saying this was literally a Tuesday. So I think all rosters were locked in by Wednesday. So then Friday, I get called. I literally remember it like it was yesterday. We was in Houston. We was in just one of the players. I think it was actually stretching, but it was like myself, Luau, Pops, Eric Boateng, like all the kind of London guys that were on the team. We were just literally relaxing, chilling together. I get a call saying, can I come down to the coach's office? So in my mind, I have no clue what's going on. I ask guys around me, if any of you had spoken with anybody, like, what's this about? So in my mind, I'm like, I know what I've been told by my agent, but in my mind, I'm like, this isn't good news. So as I walk in, obviously the head coach is there, assistant coach is there, both assistant coaches are there, and then also the team manager or whoever, I don't know his title. I don't want to say no names. I don't know. I just don't know the title. Everybody's in the room sitting down. So in my mind, I'm like, this is going to be 10 times worse than it needs to be. So then obviously they go in. I go in, have this meeting, and they tell me that they've decided to cut me. So obviously, first thing that goes in my mind is, did you not just tell my agent that I was fine? Obviously, they don't know that my agent's gone and told me this, but didn't you just tell my agent I was fine? So I've let it go. And then their reason being, they told me that they're letting me go because on this team, obviously, at the time, Luau is obviously in the NBA, Pops is in and out of the NBA, Dick Joel's obviously with Portland at this time. And then obviously you've got myself, Dan, guys like that at the 3, 4, and 5 that can all play, but saying at this time, we don't think it's going to be that you're not going to have play major minutes per game. And that if you've got an opportunity, whether it be to make it in the NBA with Summer League and whatnot, and be able to showcase your talents over there, we feel that it's better for you to do that. So myself, as a, obviously I'm not 18 at the time, I'm 23, 24 years old. I think I'm old enough to make my own decisions. Obviously, you know who's around you, you know who's going to play, who's not going to play, or whatever, but being the experience of being able to be an Olympian is something that obviously I would have been able to carry with me for the rest of my life. So I had chosen that over maybe this summer playing in the summer league. But then now they've put me in a situation where my agent has told all teams and they've locked in their rosters that they're not going to have me for summer league, because he's chosen to play for Great Britain in the Olympics. And now I'm getting told less than a week later that they're making the decision for me, which kind of messed me over because, like I said, teams was locked in and I wasn't able to be in a good situation for Summer League now.
I mean, with that in mind and the kind of tough road you've had with GB, I mean, again, going back to what we talked about with your son, now he's 7 and he might like to see you do things that he can remember. If they called you up, whoever's coaching the team, and we never know from window to window, would you ever like to play for GB again, just to kind of give your son something to see, or maybe to kind of finish on a better experience than you've had?
Never know. It's been interesting. Everybody thought, and I can clear it up, but everybody thought I would have got a call or whatever, because obviously at the time of this last window that I was leading the BBL in scoring, that I was finally back on British soil and I would be playing again, and I never got the phone call. Obviously, it's not up to me. It's not up to... one thing I've learned growing up is control the controllables. So if it's out of my hands, it's not in my hands. If you don't give me a call, then I can't say no. I can't say yes, but I definitely can't say no. So when people see my name not on lists and stuff, they probably assume that I've said or told them I don't want to play for you guys no more, don't call me anymore, or don't whatever. The team as a whole, or as a franchise or whatever, Great Britain, they haven't spoken to me about playing for them, so I'm not going to go out my way. It's not for me to go out to be like, do you want me to play for you guys? If you want me to play, then it's for them to come to me as a player and be like, would you, we now that you're home and you're here on a consistent basis, we want you back in the fold. But they haven't reached out to me, so it is what it is, to be honest with you.
Watch this space or not, as the case may be.
Yeah.
Last couple of things. You've got, I understand, 2-year deal in the Royals, that's correct.
Mm.
Do you ever see yourself...
It's a 1+1, actually.
One plus
it's one. Not guaranteed next year.
If they take that up, or you take that up, do you ever see yourself packing your bags and heading overseas again, or would you like, ideally, if the money's right, the situation's right, just to stay put now?
It just depends. Everything depends.
On the money. On the money, of course.
To be, yeah, it's funny because, like, people look at it as a negative. When people talk about, oh, yeah, if the money's right or this, that's the rest. But if you, as a journalist, if you make, say, 40K a year doing it in the UK and you can make 100K a year doing it in Spain, you're not going to be like, well, I should stay home because it's home. You're going to be like, well, they're paying me over twice as much in Spain, so why would I not just do the exact same thing I have been doing and take the money in Spain?
I'm just going to look at the snow outside and think there's sunshine in Spain. I'm going to Spain, forget the money.
Yeah, but that's what you say. But if it was vice versa and they were paying you 100K in the UK in the snow and they was paying you 40K in Spain, I'm pretty sure
you'd that's tough. That's a tougher choice.
But it's just, yeah, obviously it's a comfort zone. And it's not just, obviously, it's a major part playing in front of my son, but just the rest of my family. I got uncles, cousins, aunts, you know what I mean, all coming to my game, nephews, godkids, my godson, my goddaughters that have come to the game and love to see me play and just to see everybody else. And all of that plays a part in it. But saying that, I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine, an old friend of mine, saying that, it just depends. It's not something I've locked out or whatever, but obviously you got to picture what the BBL is viewed as overseas. So it's not somewhere where I can be for 2 years and then 3 years and expect to go back to wherever I may be and get the same money that I was getting 2 or 3 years ago. So it's got to be something where if it, like I said, I'm on a 1+1. So I think going or speaking with my agent, I could still make good money overseas next year, but I don't know how much that would impact the year after, because basketball is very much what can you do for me now? What can you show for me now? So if I'm doing whatever I'm doing and the league is not respected, they'll think that I'm playing at a lower level, that I should be averaging whatever I'm averaging here, but you can't do it again in another league. So, obviously, like I said, I like the Royals' view, the Royals' picture, and what they want it to be down the line. So as long as, like you said, as long as it's in a good situation, I feel that I'm comfortable here. And obviously, I love playing with the fellas, and majority of these guys that I've played against, whether it be in the summers or as kids, I love it all. So it's just about... hopefully being able to maintain that and keep the vision alive for the future. And like you said, if we end up playing in Europe in the next year or two, that's obviously even better because you're still playing at a high level of basketball.
Last question. Well, I can ask you this because we don't have the kind of anti-tampering rules in the BBL that we have in the NBA. But just you've mentioned.
I already know where you're going with
best, this. Best chum, his deal's up this summer with the London Lions. Let's say he was open to a move. How much would you be whispering in his ear, or whispering in a coach or GM's ear to say, the two of us would kind of like to play together before we retire?
It's just interesting. It's interesting. Not just him, though. There's a few guys, and I'm not even talking about in the BBL, there's guys overseas, and you don't realize how much people watch British guys, or British guys watch each other, until you make a move like this, because I've had calls from literally everybody overseas about my experiences this year, and like I said, I'm not just narrowing it down to just Justin, but there's a lot of guys talking, and they know obviously if I came back that they do have some type of money. So like a lot of guys have been speaking, a lot of guys have been talking about what's it like to be home, how is it to be back, and obviously like I said, players respect players, and they know that what we each go through when we're overseas and what we go through when we're not overseas. And just trying to see if it's on a professional level in terms of being treated the right way as players. Obviously, when we're overseas, using Ovi or Miles Hessen or guys that are playing Dan Clark at a high level in Europe, that know that like we're so expendable out there versus if you come home, you know you're in a comfort zone where you can actually be comfortable and play, and it's not in terms of you have one bad game and they're thinking, all right, well, do I need to get rid of him? You have two bad games, well, all right, we might. I've had situations where I know guys that have, or Americans that have been to my teammates, literally had two or three bad games back to back to back, and they have somebody in the crowd literally waiting for you to have another bad game so they can send you home. So, like, just as a comfort level and being at home and being with guys that you love to work out with and play with every day and compete with every day, whether it be in practice and or off the court, but just guys that you love to be around and guys that you can actually have good relationships, not just in between them lines.
So has Lol Deng been on the phone saying, if I came back, would it be a good place to play?
He's in a couple group chats with me. So there's a couple group chats with myself, Luau, that Justin's in. That we all joke around about, and but we know at the end of the day it's all love, and obviously most people know that we're Brixton guys, so we all joke around and have fun with it. And just from signing, I think Luau got really active this season with how he's talking and bringing up competition and what's guys' records and who played well and who did this. I'm like, you're very much invested in the BBL this year, aren't you, Lou?
Playing fantasy league somewhere. So that's a yes. You could see him back.
Hmm?
Is that a yes? We could see him back.
Hey, I can't say no words. I can't speak about. Hey, he's in the NBA, so I can't talk about that. That could be
terrible. He's got a few million there, and yet, so he'd be fine. Anyway, Matthew Branning has been our guest on this edition of the MVP Cast. Continued success to you this season in the BBL and perhaps overseas in the future. And thank you very much for your time on this edition.
Thank you.
Every edition of the MVP Cast available to download via your preferred podcast provider. You can check out previous editions via our website. Just head to MVP247. We'll also get all the latest news from the world of British basketball. A new MVP Cast coming soon. But from me, Mark Woods, it's bye for now.